to Hoosier Ag This Week. Hoosier Ag Today's weekly look at the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm Andy Eubank, and joining me today are Gary Truitt, Ashley Davenport, our chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, with his Indiana Farm Forecast, and Eric Pfeiffer now in the studio.
Hi, Andy. Today we preview the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo. Changes coming for that this December. A review of planter modifications to think about. And Andy, we have a new Purdue Crop Chat podcast.
We sure do, Eric, and I know you and I both agree it was good to catch up with the Purdue guys on Thursday. The focus on this podcast is fit soils and determining when they're best suited to get the heavy equipment out there. In this segment of the show, we have Bob Utterback with his thoughts on the Friday supply and demand report.
But first, there is some legislative controversy here in Indiana with Senate Bill 303. It's a bill that would update some outdated language in Indiana code regarding ethanol, but would also add a controversial additional label to gas pumps that distribute E15 or unleaded 88 in the state. The bill has passed the Indiana House and Senate and is now making its way to Governor Eric Holcomb for his signature.
We're calling on Governor Eric Holcomb to veto Senate Bill 303.
That's Tim Phelps, Executive Director of the Indiana Ethanol Producers Association. He says Senate Bill 303 is an anti-ethanol, anti-farmer, and anti-fuel choice piece of legislation.
We strongly believe that Senate Bill 303 will, quite frankly, is why it's important for Indiana farmers, will directly result in less ethanol or less corn being ground in Indiana to go to products like E15.
Phelps points out that E15 was approved 10 years ago by the EPA, and since then, Americans have driven 20 billion trouble-free miles on E15. E15 is available for use in any passenger vehicle 2001 and newer, which represents 97% of cars on the road today. So with all of that in mind, Phelps questions why Indiana would need an additional label warning consumers about E15.
E15 already has a label. It's mandated by the federal government, and it provides this guidance to consumers as to which vehicles the fuel is approved for and which it isn't. And any state or local label is expressly preempted by both the EPA and FTC regulations. And more than that, Eric, the federal government today is undergoing a rulemaking process to make updates to that label. So really, this is the wrong label in Indiana, this is the wrong bill for Indiana, and this is the wrong time for Indiana, and we really think that the governor should veto the bill.
And Phelps believes farmers should want the governor to veto this bill as well. He's calling on all farmers in the state to help get that message to Governor Holcomb.
So our friends at Growth Energy have set up a convenient tool that everyone can use, and you can text the term veto now. That's veto now to 52886. And what that'll do is it'll set you up and you can send a note to Governor Holcomb telling him that you support E15. You want the state of Indiana to support E15 and not try to sabotage sales of E15 across the state, and urge him to veto this bill.
So that's the ethanol group's side of the story, but there is another side to it. Indiana Farm Bureau and Country Mark are asking the governor to sign the bill into law. INFB Associate Director for Policy Engagement Jeff Cummins says the process of SB 303 started a couple of years ago.
It was around that time we realized our definition of gasohol was outdated. It was a reference to a federal tax code which defined gasohol as E10 or less. And so there was some concern, not amongst all, but amongst some refiners and retailers, that would limit their ability to effectively sell the E15 year-round. Now, we know some did, and so it was not a concern across the board. I want to be clear about that. And then we needed some additional alignment on those reed vapor pressure levels, the ones in particular regulated at the state level.
Legislators, though, wanted consumer protection and were asking for a label. Cummins says that while they preferred for there not to be an additional label, that was the compromise made to move forward with the bill to change the necessary language.
We thought, and our theory was, if this gives any refiner or retailer the additional certainty they need on gasohol, on RVP, to move more ethanol, that's ultimately a good. So we tried to say, let's not miss the forest for the trees. What's the ultimate goal? And that is to crush more corn, burn more ethanol. And so we thought that if any refiner or retailer was given the certainty they needed there, That would be a good thing.
Despite the difference in opinion regarding SB 303, Cummins says ag groups need to come together for future opportunities.
We need to look past this moment in time, and we need to build a bridge amongst the coalition of liquid fuels and agriculture, because at the end of the day and longer term, it's us versus electric vehicles. So liquid fuels needs to try to be as united as possible, and we hope that we can begin conversations over the summer and fall on what other initiatives we can take on that would be productive and beneficial for biofuels.
Indiana farmer-owned cooperative Country Mark is also a proponent of SB 303. They say it will enable them to buy, blend, and sell more ethanol. Country Mark President and CEO Matt Smorch told Hoosier Ag Today in a statement, quote, "From our experience, a word of caution on a fuel dispenser will not reduce the demand for E15. So again, some controversy here about SB 303. If you want to learn more about the bill, you can do so at HoosierAgToday.com. While you're there, you can listen to my full interviews with both Tim Phelps from the Indiana Ethanol Producers Association and Jeff Cummins with Indiana Farm Bureau. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
All right, Eric, thanks. Let's switch over to the markets, and they were impacted somewhat on Friday by the USDA April supply and demand estimates. Higher markets before the report and a drop in the soybean market after the report. We have analysis with Bob Utterback coming up. But first, let's get some numbers as reported by USDA's Radio News Service.
Some nuggets of good news in Friday's USDA supply and demand report. First, for corn, some changes on the use side of the ledger. USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Jackanowski says they've upped expected feed use of corn by 50 million bushels and ethanol use by 25 million bushels.
Stronger ethanol production than we had previously, so that's good news.
And on that score, USDA adding 75 million bushels to expected corn exports.
They just continue to grow.
March, the biggest corn export month ever. USDA did keep the corn price forecast same as last month, $4.30 a bushel. Soybeans, though, USDA
increased our price forecast a bit, 10 cents a bushel.
To 11 and a quarter average. Right now, it's more like $14 as demand continues strong, supplies dwindle. However, all eyes are on Brazil's upcoming crop. Conditions there?
Quite favorable.
And Jackanowski says, despite some early dryness concerns,
we're looking at record area, record yield, and record production.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thank you, Gary Crawford. And now, what did the markets do? What was the reaction by the trade? I checked in for that with Bob Utterback of Utterback Marketing Services and spoke with him right after the report release.
The big reaction would be, as the corn was in expectation, where we dropped down to 1350 area from the 15-plus area in ending stocks. That was pretty much anticipated, and I think it was responsible for a lot of the strength yesterday. But when you get into the world stocks increase related to the South American crop, which is contrary to a lot of people's expectation about the South American crop.
Bob Utterback with Utterback Marketing Services. His office number, toll-free, 800-832-1488. Now, Friday settlements. Corn did go back to about unchanged on the day by the end of trade. 2.5 lower May corn, 577 and a quarter. And December up just a penny and three quarters at 496.5. Beans did lose the steam and ended that way. May 1403 down 12 and a quarter. Novi contract 1263 and a quarter, a dime off. A dime higher on May wheat at 638 and three quarters. Livestock ended mixed with June live cattle 122.57 down 245. June lean hogs 108.95 up 25 cents. And that's our Friday Farm Market Review. I'm Andy Eubank on Hoosier Ag This Week.
For nearly a century, your local farmer-owned cooperative has served this community by delivering outstanding customer service, industry expertise, quality products, and leading-edge technology to our agriculture and energy partners. Today, we're committed to cultivating success in the communities we call home by providing America's farmers with the supplies and outstanding service they need to do their part to feed the world. Agronomy, liquid fuels, home heat, grain marketing, animal nutrition, feed, and more. CoAlliance, your local farmer-owned cooperative, continues to be your resource for whatever the day, month, or season brings your way.
We've got a wet weekend over the Hoosier State. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook, brought to you by Seed Genetics Direct, the largest Ohio-based independent seed company and the Eastern Corn Belt's fastest-growing independent seed company. Visit SeedGeneticsDirect.com for more information. So as we take a look at the setup here today, we've got a system coming up from the southwest. This thing came together overnight last night down in the Oklahoma, Arkansas, southern Missouri area. It's going to be shooting northeast. Over the past few days, we've seen the track of this low shift farther west, and so right now the biggest rains are going to be coming across Missouri and through Illinois. That's where we could see some 1 to 2 inch rainfall totals. But today here across Indiana, I think we can easily see quarter to three quarter inch rainfall totals over 100% of the state. We'll see the moisture kind of die off tonight, and then tomorrow wrap around moisture coming around the back and bottom side of the low that's again tracking to our west will likely bring rain back to the northern half of Indiana. I think we can see anywhere from a tenth to another half an inch of rain from I-70 northward through the day on Sunday. It all comes together and says, hey, a little bit damp here for the weekend, so we will likely put in planting talk on ice for just a little bit. Now, when I say ice, we're just going to table that. I'm not talking about major freeze coming, but it makes for an interesting segue because I do think the bigger story for the weather pattern is what's going to be happening this upcoming week. Monday will be okay. I think we turn out with a mix of clouds and sunshine. Temperature still near normal for this time of year. Tuesday forward, though, cold air from Canada sags southward across the region. I don't expect any significant precipitation Tuesday through Saturday now, but with the cool air, we're going to see temperatures below normal, and we could put several nights of frost and freeze conditions in play here across a large part of the eastern Corn Belt. Now, I do think that you get down south of US 50, southern Indiana, we're probably going to be okay, but anywhere else in the state, frost conditions easily possible a couple of nights, and in the northern tier counties, freeze conditions can happen, so just keep it in mind. However, like I said, we are moving to a fully dry forecast pattern for that Tuesday through Saturday period. So even though it's going to be cooler, temperatures normal and below normal, I still think we will see decent evaporation. So why is that important? Well, let's just look at these rainfall totals that we're talking about for today and tomorrow. If we end up with, let's say, an inch of rain across most of the state combined through the next couple of days, I still think we can see a 1/15 to 2/10 of an inch of evaporation per day, Monday through Saturday this week. So honestly, while we are going to be slowing work in the fields for a few days and we have cold air to worry about, I honestly think that at the end of this stretch, we're probably going to be in good shape to try and get back at it again. And that'll be as we move into what I would call a normal planting window. And that's your forecast update. I'm Ryan Martin.
For the most versatile applicator on the market, choose Unverfirth ProForce Spreaders. They can handle fertilizer, lime, and cover crop seed, and can spread up to four products with variable rates, even in windy conditions. To resist oxidation, all ProForce Spreaders are built with stainless steel, which makes this an ideal match for custom applicators and operations of all sizes. Precision application in a high-performance spreader. Visit your local Bain Welker dealer or bain-welker.com. Bain Welker, employee-owned, customer-focused.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. Of the Biden administration's $2 trillion American jobs plan, $621 billion is earmarked for transportation infrastructure. Here's Ashley Davenport with what that will mean for the ag supply chain.
Last week, President Biden unveiled his American jobs plan, reminiscent of a modern-day New Deal. Infrastructure, broadband, water systems, and other areas will see improvements over the next 8 years. Mike Steenhook, executive director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, says that looking at it through the transportation lens, there are many things that create optimism for rural America. One of those is upgrades to bridges.
For every farmer that I know, they all rely on a series of rural roads and bridges to be the first link in the overall supply chain. And if you don't have that system, the ultimate transaction never occurs. Supply never meets up with demand. And the fact that this American Jobs Plan does identify the need to improve 10,000 rural bridges throughout the country, that's something that's very encouraging to us.
The STC has long been advocating for a comprehensive infrastructure plan.
We also appreciate the fact that there is specific mention of some of the other modes of transportation that are very important to agriculture. and that includes the inland waterway system and our ports. $17 billion has been proposed within the American Jobs Plan to improve those modes of transportation.
However, Steenhoek does have some doubts.
The big concern I have and others have is the fact that there are a number of very significant spending categories within the American Jobs Plan that really don't conform with, I would say, most Americans' definition of infrastructure. And whenever you start adding significant and controversial spending categories to a proposal, the probability of passage goes down rather than up.
There's also tax proposals integrated into the plan that Steenhoek believes could hinder passage through Congress. Steenhoek says that this plan is not a done deal, and he hopes the opportunities to improve the ag supply chain will be retained in what passes. I'm Ashley Davenport.
Final tune-ups are taking place on many farms around the state as planting will begin soon. The latest Hat Soil Health podcast that you can find at HoosierAgToday.com or on Apple Podcasts covers what farmers with a no-till system and cover crops should be considering as they make those final tune-ups. Barry Fisher, a farmer and recent retiree of USDA's NRCS after 39 years, says if you're switching from a conventional system to no-till,
what we're really trying to achieve is that higher ear count. It's no different than conventional farming. We want every seed placed exactly the same depth and as close to the same spacing as possible. And so as we come from a conventional mindset or where we're planting behind a soil finisher, that, you know, we may have gotten away with some things that we won't be able to get away with in a no-till situation.
For Fisher, the placement of starter fertilizer is very important.
Maybe this is a new planter. We want to make sure that starter fertilizer is being placed exactly the same distance on every row from the seed, so that every seed is not only in the same depth and same spacing, but gets the same environment. And fertilizer has a lot to do with that same environment.
And of course, Fisher says you need to check all your electronics.
You're going to check sensors. You're going to check, you know, you've got to run it out in the field. Even though that field's not ready to plant yet, you still got to put it in the ground so that you can check any of the sensors. You know, a lot of these planters have not only seed drop sensors, but they've got now down pressure sensors and all this. You've got to make sure all of your electronics is really ready to go.
And after you've made all of these modifications, Fisher says you'll still have to get off the planter and make more after you've gone in the field. Tune into the Hat Soil Health podcast to learn more from Fisher and AJ Adkins from NTM Ag Equipment. Again, you can find it at HoosierAgToday.com. A proposal to eliminate the stepped-up basis in agriculture could have a costly impact. Tax policy is important in helping farmers pass their operations on to future generations. John Newton, chief economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, talks about what eliminating the stepped-up basis would mean for farmers.
To reduce the capital gains tax, farmers and ranchers use stepped-up basis, which provides a reset for the basis during intergenerational transfer or to the market value at the date of death. Without stepped-up basis and considering the dramatic increase that we've seen in land values in the recent decades, many farmers would face a burdensome tax hike through capital gains taxes when they sell all or a portion of the farm's assets.
He says Farm Bureau and the American Soybean Association recently ran the numbers on what the potential gains taxes would be per acre of cropland.
Based on USDA's data from 1997 and assuming a capital gains tax rate of 20%, we found that the taxes would be anywhere from $500 to $800 per acre across the Corn Belt and over $1,000 per acre in portions of Iowa and Illinois. In areas closer to urban areas where land values have appreciated more rapidly, the taxes could be even higher per acre. The longer the land has been in the family, the higher the capital gains tax most likely is going to be.
Farmers can write their members of Congress asking for support of the stepped-up basis at fb.org/advocacy. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
This is Money Minute, financial tips from the experts at AgriFinancial. With me is Mike Reed, Regional Sales Officer with AgriFinancial. This spring, many farmers find themselves with more cash on hand, or as bankers like to call it, working capital. What are some of the options to consider with investments of this working capital?
A lot of the things we're doing, the interest rate environment over the last year has been very good. We've been able to hold fixed rates on real estate down. We've been able to to redo loans, bring interest rates down. There's really not much need to sit on a lot of cash today.
So what's a good investment?
We've continued to see very good real estate market. There's a lot of bidders out there. Again, I'm going to say at this point in time, the demand for land certainly is equal to the supply, or maybe the demand exceeds the supply.
Mike Reed with AgriFinancial. For more information, contact AgriFinancial at cgb-agfi.com. This is Money Minute from AgriFinancial.
Weather plays a big role in maximizing crop yields. Let Mother Nature play her hand and make timely application decisions based on your needs by adding an UnverFirth liquid fertilizer applicator to your equipment lineup. UnverFirth Nutramax fertilizer applicators are built with growers in mind and feature a single coulter, double coulter, or dual delivery application system for added versatility. Visit your local Bain Welker dealer or bain-welker.com. Bain Welker, employee-owned, customer-focused.
Mark your calendar for December 14 through 16 to attend the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo. Hey, it may be the first indoor farm show you get to attend in 2021. Exhibitors, space reservations are now open, so get your contracted details at IndianaFarmExpo.com. And remember, the show has a new location, the Grand Park facility in Westfield, Indiana. The Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, December 14 through 16.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Andy Eubank. Planting season is here, and there has been some of that activity in Indiana, but is it the right time or maybe too early? In the new Purdue Crop Chat podcast, Dr. Bob Nielsen and a special guest discuss fit soils. Across Indiana, much of the state's topsoil is dry, according to Nielsen.
Percentage of the subsoil and topsoil that is short or shorter is much higher this year than it was a year ago. So, yeah, I think it remains to be maybe a fearmonger kind of thing as to whether we're going to move on into a real drought. But nevertheless, we can't seem to really get rid of that in those nagging areas of areas that are in the drought categories.
The latest U.S. drought monitor has parts of the northern third of Indiana abnormally dry, with some pockets of moderate drought. Dr. Tony Vine, Purdue professor of agronomy, is surprised just how dry the topsoil is for this point in April. But are soils fit for first tillage operations or planting in no-till and strip-till fields? On the podcast, Vine explains the determination of whether soils are fit for those operations.
Is what is the status of the soil moisture 1 inch below the intended depth of that mechanical operation, whether that's tillage to a 3-inch depth or whether that's planting to a 2-inch depth.
Vine describes his non-scientific but practical method of assessing soils.
Remove that drier soil at the top, dig down with a flat spade to 1 inch below the intended depth of that spring tillage pass or that planting pass. So let's say you're going down from 3 to 4 inches. Take an inch of soil at that layer and attempt to squeeze it and to roll it between the palms of your hands. How likely is it that I can form a 1/4 inch cigar or a 1/4 inch worm that is 4 to 5 inches long between my hands?
If you can form that soil cigar or worm, then the soil is too wet for operations without running the risk of compaction. Hear the full podcast now on your preferred podcast platform, and it's available at the Purdue Crop Chat page on HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Andy Eubank. In the United States, more than 100 million acres are infested with resistant weeds, and farmers need ways to control weed pressure all season long. Eric Pfeiffer back with us with that report.
Andy Carragher, Enlist field specialist, discusses the importance and value of adopting a herbicide program approach.
It utilizes and allows the farmers to utilize multiple options to control weeds, basically from planting through harvest. And so it gives them, they can take advantage of multiple herbicide sites of action to control some of their toughest weed problems in their fields, like water hemp and Palmer.
Carragher says a program approach is also crucial to help in the spread of resistance. So at Corteva AgriScience, they recommend a complete herbicide approach on every acre possible. including those with the new Enlist E3 soybean trait.
It's probably the best approach to start with a clean seed bed using a tillage or a burn down or a combination of both, followed by a really good, whether it's one of ours or somebody else's, a really good pre-emergent herbicides.
Carragher says Enlist herbicides and E3 soybeans are combined to offer the most flexibility compared with other traits in the market, and they've had very good luck combining it with the program approach. Always read and follow label directions.
After a COVID break for most indoor farm shows in 2020, those events will hopefully come back this year. And here in the Hoosier State, the comeback of the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo will include a brand new venue on December 14 through 16. Grand Park Events Center in Westfield will be the host. And in a new promotional video, the president of the expo, Gary Truitt, says this new location offers more options for exhibitors and farmers.
As you can see from the ceiling, we have lots of height. We're going to bring in big equipment, some of the newest technology that Indiana farmers have the ability to use. We will also have many of the features that you have come to expect from the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, our seminar series. We will have a seminar stage right here on the show floor, bringing in some great speakers, including Machinery Pete and many others, with practical information for you.
Health and safety remain a primary concern, and no one knows exactly what conditions will be in December.
But the Grand Park facility is prepared, and they will have a safe and healthy environment for all of you who are attending the show, either as show attendees or as exhibitors. The aisles will be very wide, and there will be health protocols to keep everyone safe and make this a very enjoyable experience. We are very excited about the new look, feel, and location.
You can get a look at the venue at IndianaFarmExpo.com and click on the video. And if you click on exhibitors, there is complete information on how to get involved in this year's expo, so you can take advantage of time with Indiana's agriculture producers this coming December. You're up to date now on Indiana agriculture news and the markets and weather. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.